Now we are going to discuss about the Uraga Sutta. This is a very interesting sutta. This is the very first sutta available in Sutta Nipata, one of the books, one of the texts available in Kuddaka Nikaya. An interesting feature of this sutta is again and again Buddha repeats a particular statement. So bhikkhu jahati oraparam urago jinnamiva tacham purana. Now you know there are certain custom, kind of a action that all the serpents are doing, that whenever a worn out skin happen, so they try to shed it out or shed it off, and they are using various methods, either going through a very tiny hole or going through a hole of a tree. So likewise they use various mechanisms so that their worn out skin can be removed. And they are, when they are shedding it out, so they have kind of a disgust about it. They don't want to keep it. Rather, they want to quickly come out of it, remove it. So Buddha uses this action in order to promote a certain spiritual quality within the practitioners. Because as you know, when we are continuing our practice, we too have to shed out certain demons, certain wrong tendencies, habits that we continuously maintain. Actually, we can consider that whole samsaric journey is something based on various habits that we have. Sometimes we call as latent tendencies or traits that we have. And therefore, if it is possible for us to put them out, if it is possible for us to let them go, completely abandon. So that helps to actually have a new life, a new way of thinking, new attitude. Because constantly our minds are fairly going through certain fixations. So we are with various fixed views. Again and again our minds are conditioned in a particular way of thinking. So whenever we encounter some problem, so that is the way that we think. That is how our minds are very much like programmed. So very much like our minds are fairly conditioned, programmed, and always certain thought patterns triggered whenever we encounter certain incident. It's very much like difficult for us to think newly or have a different way of reaction or proper action, because our minds are fairly conditioned in a particular way of thinking. So those are very much like predefined, very much like deeply rooted in our minds. So that is why it is quite difficult for us to think newly, have kind of a naive idea, have a different idea, have entirely different thought pattern. Because minds are fairly conditioned. But vipassana, on the other hand, helps us to recognize these deeply rooted tendencies in our mind so that we no more become a victim of those tendencies. Even though I am telling that there is no more, actually it's a kind of a process happening slowly. We do recognize these various tendencies we have in the mind, and slowly try to come out of them without being a victim of them. We are trying to recognize these various thought patterns, various tendencies, various traits operating in our mind. So that is why, I mean, if we are able to temporarily have kind of a mind which is free from defilements, still we can't say that we are safe, because latent tendencies are still hidden and they can be operative when the necessary conditions are available. So that's why Buddha again and again encourages us to abandon all these asavas, taints. So till we have taints, so we can't say that we are safe. We are deeply influenced by these taints. As a result of that, we never know how we would react in a particular situation, because we are being fairly influenced by these deeply rooted taints in our minds. So that is why Buddha's teaching is quite important, where he helps us to recognize these things. He'll help us to understand the gravity of these things, various traits in operating in our mind. Actually, in order to recognize those, we need to go through a mindful process so that we are being mindful about the situation. And that also consists of various methods, techniques. And once we are able to recognize our own various emotions, thought patterns, tendencies, habits operating in the mind, then we have a fair chance not to become a victim of that, rather to step back and watch them. So that have a deep change within ourselves, and it might reflect as a kind of a behavioral change within ourselves, because these thought patterns, habits are the ones ultimately govern our behavior, even the bodily behavior. So when someone is practicing mindfulness, someone is practicing vipassana, so slowly he starts to recognize these behaviors, these traits, and try to avoid becoming a victim of them, so that he have a better opportunity to look newly, to look at deeply, so that he may no more kind of biased in a particular way of thinking. Now, in this particular verse that we have now gone through four verses, and now we have come to the fifth verse, Buddha mentioned another activity here. Yo nājjagamā bhavesu sāraṁ vichināṁ kuppamiva udumbaresu so bhikkhu jahāti yorapāraṁ urago jinnamiva tacham purāṇam. Now, here actually Buddha mentioned something related to the non-self. One who finds no ko in states of existence, as one seeking flowers in Udumbara trees finds none, that bhikkhu gives up the here and the beyond as a serpent sheds its own worn-out skin. Now, an interesting incident happens here. During the Buddha's time, one Brahmin wants to find a way to give as a dowry or as a kind of a adornment to his child, his daughter. Now, this particular Brahmin has a daughter. Now, she is going to marry. And during the wedding ceremony, he want to give a garland to this particular daughter, which garland that nobody has ever used. The flowers available in that garland that nobody ever has used. So this is the kind of idea this father is having. Now people are having various different types of ideas, different wishes, because as fathers, as mothers, they want to make their children quite specific, quite important, or quite different from others. And this is how parents are operating. They want to be happy by seeing their children's beauty. They want to be happy by seeing their children's skills, their various extraordinary skills maybe. Now say for example, if your child won the race in 100 meters, then you'll be happy. If your child becomes the first in the class, you may be happy. If your child won kind of another contest, you'll be happy. So likewise, parents are the ones who are try to be happy by seeing the success of their children. Now, this particular father has a special wish, that is during his daughter's wedding, that he want to adorn his daughter with a flower which no one has ever worn. Now he is going after looking various flowers, trees, and everywhere he go, he recognize, okay, this particular flower I have seen in another ceremony that people have used. I have seen this particular flower being used in another ceremony. So likewise, he is wandering at different places, and there he found all the flowers are being used in all the ceremonies. So he couldn't find out a particular flower which is never being used. Now he come across certain group of people. They are kind of mischievous, and he actually mentioned his requirement to them, and now they want to cheat him. They mentioned that you better find the flowers of Udumbara tree. Now Udumbara tree is a tree which never bear flowers. Now this Brahmin never knew that, so therefore he is now trying to recognize this Udumbara trees and trying to recognize the flowers of the Udumbara trees. Now he is searching these flowers, but still he couldn't find. And now he come across one of the monks who is dwelling in the forest meditating, and he accidentally come across this monk. And to this particular monk, he states that his requirement, Venerable Bhante, so I am searching Udumbara flowers, and somebody mentioned that others have never used these Udumbara flowers. So I am searching these flowers so that I can adorn my child. Now at that particular moment, that particular monk advised him that you will never find Udumbara flowers. So there is no such flowers as called Udumbara flowers. So they actually have cheated you. You will never find Udumbara flowers. Now at this very moment, Buddha was looking this monk's mentality. Now his mind is fairly attuned towards a situation that you can't find this. You can't find this particular Udumbara flowers. You will never find it. Now Buddha very beautifully divert his way of thinking to another way. There he instructs, telling that you can't find a core. You can't find an essence, something substantial, kind of a self at any place. Now you know there is a very interesting Dhammapada verse available. Sabbe sankhara anattati yada panyaya passati. Sabbe dhamma anattati yada panyaya passati. Athanibbindati dukkhe samaggo visuddhiya. Actually, during the first verse, Buddha mentioned sabbe sankhara anicchati. That means all the conditioned phenomena are impermanent. So seeing that or understanding that is a great insight. And if one has such insight, then it is a path of purification. It's a way of purification. It's a maggo visuddhiya. And then the second verse Buddha mentioned sabbe sankhara dukkhati yada panyaya passati. Ata nibbindati dukkhe esa maggo visuddhiya. So if one is able to understand that all the conditioned phenomena are suffering, unsatisfactory, you can't find lasting happiness through this all conditioned phenomena. So that's a way of another purification where you abandon the desire. So you give up desiring these conditioned phenomena because you understand that you can't find lasting happiness through this conditioned phenomena. As a result of that, your mind gets freed. And on the other hand, the third verse with the highlights, sabbe dhamma anattati yada panyaya passati atta nibbindati dukkhe samaggo visuddhiya. So if one understand that all the phenomena are lack of any essence, lack of any core, lack of any self, soul. So that is another very great insight where you recognize non-self, anatta. Now here Buddha try to pay attention to this particular characteristics. Now that particular monk is advising that Brahmin that you will never find Udumbara flowers. Now Buddha points out to that particular monk that you will never find an essence, a core of any of these conditioned phenomena. One who finds no core in states of existence. Now when we are applying that to all the types of existence, Now, you know, different types of existence are there according to the teachings. Now, typically, different realms are explained. Now, we are in the karma realm, karma loka, karma bhava. So, that is where the human realm and the celestial realms and the hell realms. Now, all these are in the karma loka, what we call the desire realm. And our bodies are like this and our desires are like this. And we want to satisfy our senses. So these are the kind of a desire realm. Karma loka. Karma bhava. And we born as humans and we have eyes. Through the eyes we are trying to look at various sights so that our desires are satisfied. And through ears, we are trying to listen to various music, various songs, so that our desires are satisfied. And through the nose, we are trying to experience various odors, smells, so that our desires are satisfied. And through tongue, we are trying to experience various tastes, so that our desires are satisfied. And through the body, that we are trying to experience various tactile sensations. So the desires are satisfied. Now these are the five sensual cords using which we are trying to gratify our senses, our desires. So it's always kind of a pleasure principle that we are working on, always trying to satisfy the senses, try to gratify the senses, satisfy various desires. So very much like we are driven by desires, driven by craving, driven by tanha. So this is the desire-driven realm, so we are born to. So it is quite acceptable that we all have desires. Particularly in this karma bhava, we have various sensual desires. We want to see beautiful sights, we want to hear beautiful music. So likewise, these senses are always quite hungry that we want to feed them. It's very much like that. And on the other hand, there is another realm called Rupa realm, where one develops one's mind and attain certain jhana absorptions. As a result of that, one may become a Rupavachara Brahma at that particular realm. So that is called Rupa Bhava. So it's a form realm. There's a form which is more perfect. And it doesn't subject to any of the wear and tear. So they are living for long, long time, eons. And that's called Rupa Bhava. And on the other hand, some others practice Arupa Jhana, formless Jhana. And they can even become free from form. So they don't have any kind of material form. Or they have only the mental phenomena, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana. So they are reborn in the Arupa Jhana realms. But you already probably have heard Akasa Nanchayatana, the boundless space, Vijnana Nanchayatana, boundless consciousness, Akinchanyayatana, nothingness, Nevasanya, Nasanyayatana, neither perception nor non-perception. Now these are Arupa realms and those are different realms that according to the Dhamma that people are or the beings are born to. Now the same situation have different way of interpretations. Sometimes mention Sanyi Bhava, Asanyi Bhava, Neva Sanyi, Na Sanyi Bhava. That's another way of categorization. Now all the realms that we have fairly discuss asanyi, they have a perception. On the other hand, there are one realm called asanya satta, another Brahma realm, so they don't have any perception. And on the other hand, there is another one called nevasanyi, nasanyi, so they almost very much like there is no perception and there is no neither perception, so it's very much in between. So this is another way of categorization based on the perception, various sanya, signs. And depending on the aggregates, there is another categorization. So we are ekavokara bhava, chatuvokara bhava, panchavokara bhava. Now, eka vokara bhava. So that is the asanya sattva where only the rupa, the matter is only available. There is no other mental aggregates. And then chatuvokara bhava is where only the mental parts are there. Feelings, perceptions, formations and the consciousness are available, but there is no any form that is actually the arupa brahma realm. So that is called chatuvokara bhava. And the panchavokara bhava is where all the five aggregates are available. So that is the human realms, hell realms, deva realms. So these are, and the rupa brahma realms. But that is where all the five aggregates are available. So likewise, according to Dhamma, various categorizations are available. But the interesting point is, even though you come up with various these categorizations, various these realms, situations, none of them have any essence. None of them have any self. None of them have any soul, any core. So that is the interesting point. So various beings may be born into various realms. Either it may be human realm, either it may be hell realm, either it may be celestial realm, either it may be rupa brahma realm, maybe arupa brahma realm, but still there is no any essence, there is no any core, there is no any soul, there is no any self. That's an interesting statement by the Buddha. Even though we are going through kind of a rebirth cycle, from this birth to another birth, from that to another birth. So it's kind of a continuation happens. But there is no soul. But there is no self. Now understanding this is quite difficult in a way. Because we feel that there is someone traversing from one world to the other. From one life to the other. So that is what typically we think. That is why certain many other religions are actually mentioned. There is self. There is a feeling of self. There is I. There is a person. So this is the way that they are trying to explain the situation. There is someone. There is a core. There is everlasting self traversing from one life to the other. But according to Buddha's teaching, there is no such thing. There is no such lasting or everlasting self surviving throughout all these existences. Now, according to the Buddha's teaching, whenever there is kind of ignorance, so we do create various karma. So as a result of that, we are getting another rebirth. There again, we accumulate karma. Again, we get another birth. So likewise, this karma is one important factor playing a role so that a kind of a continuity happens. And on the other hand, there is a significant influence coming from the craving. So we always have a thirst. We always have desires, sometimes unfulfilled desires. So they always help us to have kind of an inclination. I want this, I want that. I'm always in search of something. I'm anticipating something. So this kind of an inclination is there available in our minds, so that our minds are always geared to look at something in the future. If that is available, I'll be happy. If I can be with her, I'll be happy. If I can be with him, I'll be happy. So likewise, we have various desires. So those desires are driving us, motivating us. And so we are driving ourselves. These cravings are the ones always appear or operating like partners to us in this long samsara. And they are always driving us. So never satisfied, never fulfilled. Always have some sort of a thirst. So likewise, we are rolling on and on in this samsara. Due to various reasons. Karma is one reason, tanha is another reason. And we can say consciousness appear like a seed where depending on this previous situations that it get established. So therefore Buddha mentioned කම්මං කෙත්තං විඤ්ඤාණං බීජං තණ්හා සිනේහ. Now there is a field of actions. There is a field of say past merit or demerit, which have the potential to give results. And then the craving have their moisture, giving enough fertilizer to continue. And seed is the vijnana, the consciousness. So when enough craving is available, when enough kamma is available, giving enough fertilizer, field, so then the continuation of birth happens again and again. Now, even though we are continuing like this, but there is no any inner core, there is no any self, there is no lasting soul. So this is an interesting statement made by the Buddha, which is quite different from other religions. So understanding this non-self is one of the interesting characteristics of Vipassana meditation, where you are observing various aggregates. You are trying to investigate various aggregates. So you are investigating, say, the form aggregate. You are going through elements meditation. You are closely examining each and every aggregate, each and every element. So there you may understand their impermanent nature, inconstant nature. So when you are understanding their inconstant nature, quickly arising and passing away nature, there you may slowly understand, okay, when things are quickly arising and passing away, how can there be a lasting, permanent soul here, which can survive throughout this changing process? There can't be. And on the other hand, suppose that you are observing various feelings. So they also change. Now, happy feelings, pleasurable feelings, painful feelings, equanimous feelings, now they are always changing. So how can there be a soul which we can attribute to feelings? So if we are examining various perceptions, various signs, marks, they also change. So there can't be a self within the perceptions aggregate. So if you are analyzing various thoughts, different mental states, they also change, they come and go, they are varying. You may experience or you may examine one thought after another. Each and every thought have a property of arising and passing, coming and going. So how can there be a soul, self, within the thoughts, inside thoughts? And you are operating with various senses through the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind. So an arising of knowing happens, the consciousness happens, cognition happens. And that is also arising and passing away at that very moment. So how can there be a self attributed to the consciousness? So likewise, so more and more you do this investigation, so probably the yogi may understand each and every aggregate can't have any kind of a lasting core. Anything substantial, anything which survives throughout this whole changing process, because everything is subjected to arising and passing away. Nothing survives. Nothing transmigrates from this to that. So this is where one may understand the sunyata, one may understand the emptiness, one may understand the callousness. There is no any essence, nothing substantial available. Nothing is transferring from this place to another place, from this realm to another realm. So these are very interesting deep teachings of the Buddha. So Buddha wants to point out this to that particular monk, because that particular monk's mind was fairly attuned towards not finding any flowers in the Udumbara trees. Now, Buddha points out that you will never find any core in any of the existence. Either you may travel from this to that, born to this realm to the another realm, But there is no any core, there is no any essence, there is no any really a being. But when the aggregates comes together, we refer there is a person. Like when various components are assembled, say four wheels, a bonnet, steering wheel, engine, fuel, seats. So all together, once we are assembled them all together in a particular style, we call it a car. We call it a van, we call it a bus, but it's a combination of so many components, but we give a name. This is a bus, this is a car. Similarly, Buddha mentioned, when different aggregates are assembled together, when they are operating together, they are operating harmoniously, then we call that situation. Oh, this is a man, this is a woman, this is a doll, this is a crowd. So like different names that we give, but what is actually available is 5 aggregates, or maybe 6 sense bases, or maybe elements. So likewise, Buddha's teaching help us to understand this coreless nature, or essenceless nature, or non-self nature. So that we may, rather than making a self, we may be in a position to understand self. We may be in a position to understand how self is mind-made. How we create a self. How we appropriate a self. How we ignorantly make a self, make a person, make an I. So there we can understand if one is trying to be aware of this I-making, so this mind-making, so this self-making. So that is something that we do. That is something that we create ignorantly. Not that it is existing, rather because of the ignorance that we create a self. We create a person. So that is an interesting insight that one may again and again experience, that how mind is trying to create a self, how mind is trying to make a self. So if one understand that I making, mind making, self making, person making, then you may understand, okay, no point of doing it. It's a useless task. Where there is no self, because of the ignorance, I am trying to create a self. This is a very interesting insight, kind of an eye-opening insight that one may go through. Then if you are able to understand that and ignore that habit, eye-making, mind-making, then probably these 5 aggregates may operate without an attachment, without clinging, without grasping. Because the grasping is the one causing to make a self. But if there is no any grasping, there can't create a self. You can't create a self if there is no any grasping. So these are very interesting insights that we can discuss around this particular verse. So with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Avasarai Bante, I will be reading the questions today.
Yeah.
So we have 3 questions now. The first one, mindful sitting. Dear Bante, after a few years of practicing mindfulness, focusing on the breath and the walking process, I started observing the thoughts based on your guidance. Initially, I was observing the presence of thoughts and the heaviness or stress of these thoughts against the relaxed state without thoughts, which we come across during the regular practice. Now I can be aware of thoughts arising at least after a certain level and then going away. When the thoughts arising, I can feel the intent or some drive underneath making them arise, but cannot clearly comprehend what is the mental quality which drives these thought patterns. Maybe I should be practicing more on rising and passing away in order to comprehend the underlying causes. Thought of reflecting this and seeking any guidance. Much merits for your valuable service with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. So, I mean, interesting question, because sometimes we can't recognize the content because these thoughts quickly appear and then disappear. So whenever we are trying to be mindful, they quickly disappear. So then we can't recognize the actual content of it. That is fine, actually. I mean, it is not essential to recognize the content. Rather, when we are trying to be mindful, if thoughts are disappearing, that's well, that's good. Because it is not the value of thought, or it is not the content of thought which is more important. Rather, we are trying to maintain a mind free from thinking, free from mental proliferation, or free from the influence of the taints. So that mind, where you are recognizing the unattached situation, unattached or non-grasping state of mind, that is fairly free from any of these influences. Say, for example, that you're practicing and one in a given moment that you are able to maintain a mind which is not attached to anything. Now there are thoughts arising and now you are being aware of those thoughts. And once you are aware of those thoughts and they start to quickly disappear, again your mind is settled, again your mind is free from any attachment. That is fine. But on the other hand, suppose there are certain thoughts remain in the mind for a long time, there are probably you can observe what are the tendencies which are promoted. So what are the content? So why these thoughts remain for a long time? Why am I strengthening them? So what are the energies that I supply to these particular thoughts? So this way probably we can go a little deeper to understand, as you said, various traits we have, various habitual tendencies we support. So by knowing that, then again we can avoid supporting that, avoid becoming a victim of that process, rather maintain a fairly unattached state of mind. So ultimately the solution remains recognizing that unattached state of mind. Because, you know, Buddha mentioned asadancha adinavancha nissaranancha pajanati. Now asada adinava nissarana. Now asada is where that you are enjoying, you become delighted into the situation so that you are grasping things. So that is one aspect. Then the adinava is that you know the consequences. You know that how impermanent they are, how suffering and unsatisfactory they are. And whenever the attachment happens, how much suffering is arising, how kind of a burden it happens. Now this is where we understand the consequences, the adinava, result of that attachment, of that grasping. Then the nissarana is where you recognize the non-attachment, the freedom from attachment, freedom from grasping. So now you are trying to associate that nissarana again and again, so that mind does not attach to anything. Mind is free from any grasping. So we are using that non-grasping state as a refuge, as a way of living, as a way of cultivation, so that we can maintain non-grasping state. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 3. This is a Dhammasaman question. Dear Bhante, based on multiple questions coming from this forum, I realize that I am not the only person who is constantly battling with the unwholesome thoughts around greed, hatred and lust. The book Magic of the Mind, introduced in the 100th session, had some excellent material related to this common issue. There was a question around the meaning of the phrase, I have well seen all that, sorry, the meaning of the phrase, I have well seen that the cessation of becoming is Nibbana, and yet I am not an arahat in whom influxes are extinct. Appreciate if Bhante can explain it a bit more detail. If this is evidence of our suffering around the influxes, even though we are committed on the Dhamma path. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very interesting question. That is where even though one has experienced Nirodha, that doesn't mean that he is an arahant. This is a question being discussed there. So experiencing Nirodha is one aspect. Experiencing cessation is one aspect. But based on that, further continuing your practice and ultimately eradicating all the defilements is another aspect we can say. So that is where, I mean, this happens in the Kosambi Sutta. Very interesting discussion between among various monks, including Venerable Ananda, Venerable Narada, and Venerable Musila. So likewise, several monks are there. So one monk actually asked a question from a real Arahant. So he is asking question: Have you yourself understood, or you yourself realized that the non-becoming is Nibbana. Bhava Nirodho Nibbana. So there is no any becoming. So the mind is free from any becoming process. Rather, it is now in the cessation state. Mind is not geared by becoming. Now, typically, if you consider our minds, so always it is looking forward, as we even previously discussed. Always we are anticipating something. Now today in Sri Lanka, so okay, people are going through various situations, difficulties, say economic problems. Now they are anticipating, okay, when are we going to be free from this crisis? When are we going to enjoy the, say, luxury? So always looking forward. So these are the desires, these are the hopes. It's quite natural, and constantly those are operating within our minds. Now, even in a say developed country, it doesn't mean that you are completely free from desires now. Suppose that you are in a developed country and you are well to do and enough fuel is available, enough food is available, but still desires are operating. I mean, even though you have money, even though you have a car, even though you have enough fuel, but your mind still has desires. Now, these desires are always driving us. They always have various ambitions. But on the other hand, when the mind is free from desires, if there are no driving forces in the mind, if there is no any becoming process, then mind becomes still. Mind has stopped. Mind doesn't want to desire anything. Mind doesn't want to wish anything. Rather, mind remains calm, quiet, still. So one can say this is a part of experience of, say, Nibbana, cessation. But interesting point is, even though one has experienced this, now one person, when he asks the question from that particular person, he says, I have understood it. Then that the questioner mentioned, okay, then you should be an Arahant. Then he become quiet. That means that he is an Arahant. And then interestingly, another person intervene and he tell, okay, please ask the same question from me. So the questioner asked that same question from that particular person. So then he also mentioned, yes, I too understood that non-becoming is Nibbana, is cessation. And then when that questioner mentioned that, yes, then you should be an Arahant, then he denies and he mentioned, no, I am not an Arahant. So even though he has realized non-grasping, non-becoming is Nibbana, cessation, he mentioned that he is not an Arahant. So that indicates, so the realization of cessation happens at one level, but one has to dwell in that kind of a situation, recognize further the taints, defilements, and complete eradication of those defilements may take time. So that is why Buddha mentioned, say, four stages in the Maggapala. Say one become a Sotapanna, another one become Sakadagami, another level is Nanagami, final stage is the Arahant. At the Sotapanna level, it is very much like mentioned in this very sutta, that very much like that you are, you see the direction. Assume that you are, lost in a desert. You don't know which direction that you have to travel. So you are going in this direction, that direction, that you are not sure where you are going to really go. Then you are lost. So that is very much like the Putujjana, the typical worlding. You don't have the proper direction. But on the other hand, the Sotapanna have seen the direction. He recognized the path, the stream winner. He recognized the stream. Now he has dropped to the stream. So what is the stream? Stream is the Noble Eightfold Path. Srota Apanna. Srota means the path of stream. So the path is a Noble Eightfold Path. Now this particular practitioner, he himself has realized the path. Okay, now this is the path. This is what I have to do. So these are the ones I have to further develop. So likewise, now he has a clear-cut path. Now he has realized it. Now it is sure. Now he is quite confirmed. Okay, this is the path that I need to implement. But he is not an arahant yet. So that's an interesting point highlighted in that particular sutta. Now the Sotapanna is a person that who has seen the path. There are the similes that assume that you are now in a desert, you have lost, and you are in search of a path, and you are quite thirsty, and you are in search of water. And in that sutta is given a simile of seeing water. Now say you are searching in water, and at a given moment that you recognize water available in a deep well. Now you have seen water. Now, you were searching water, but you were not able to find. But now, okay, you have seen water. Now there is a well and you found it. Now you have seen water. But you haven't drank water yet. You haven't went there. You haven't have a bath. You haven't have a drink. You didn't completely overcome your thirst, but you have seen water. Now you are quite definite. You don't need to look around now because you have seen water. So that is the Sotapanna, where you are quite sure about the path. Now you have to put forth effort. You have to maintain a restrainment so that you are developing the path. So very much like now you are trying to come up with various solutions to reach that water. Say you are look around and trying to find out a rope, or maybe using various other methods. Maybe you are leaning down and trying to get some little water. So you have to think of your own how to access this water. Now that is the effort, that is the wisdom that you have to use. So that is where all the development of the path. So once, say one day, suppose that you are able to reach water, are able to drink water, so that there is no thirst at all. You have completely drank water. You have now quenched the thirst. Then you can say, okay, you have not only seen water, but you have drank water. You had a bath, and now you are quite satisfied. Similarly, once you saw the path, once you realize the Noble Eightfold Path, now you need to implement it. Now you need to practice it. You have to maintain a fair amount of training according to that path. So that is why the term seeker, the trainee. So you are trying to train yourself so that you can achieve this certain qualities. So when you are fully developed the path, then one can say, okay, you are done. You are an arahant. So this realizing cessation is very much like that you have seen the water. But it doesn't mean that you are an arahant. You have to further and again we need to say practice, recognize various defilements and uproot all the defilements, and ultimately one may become completely pure, purified. Then one can say, okay, I am an arahant. Yeah.
Question number 3 or 4, this is a general question. Dear Bhante, last time you have highlighted that Kalakarama Sutra was preached in Greece or Yonaka Kingdom. Also, many centuries later in the Milinda question, Greece and King Meander were mentioned. Are there any other places that Greeks got exposed to Buddhism? And what were the outcomes of these engagements with Metta? That's the end of the question.
I don't know about much about that. because I mean, this is a kind of an ancient history where during the King Asoka's time, that various groups were, missionaries were sent to various places, various countries. And the Yonakas are the ones who received this Venerable Maharakkhita, Arahant Maharakkhita. And it is believed this Yonaka area is the present Greece. So other than that, I don't know much about history. Who else have gone to Greece? So, I mean, I don't know much about that. Yeah.
Question number.
Actually, you can refer some ancient, historical sites, because you know now only we have different countries like say India, Sri Lanka, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and likewise, so different countries are named today. But if you consider during the King Asoka, Emperor Asoka, so there are various areas, so that belongs to the same, continent and governed by a single emperor. So probably, Pakistan, Afghanistan, now they are all belong to the old India. And maybe, I don't know, the Yonakas, the Greece, also probably part of that. I don't know. Actually, we need to refer that during the Buddha's period, close to the King Asoka. So, what was the kind of country distribution, political situation during that time? And I am not much aware of that.
Question number four this is the last question. So, these are on mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, today when I was on guided sitting practice, my breath started fading away. When it reached a very subtle level, I started getting some jerks on my body. They were like small electric shocks on my upper body. When I moved my focus to these tiny movements, the breath started getting gross and I switched back to breath. This cycle repeated throughout the period, breath getting subtle and jerks appearing and breath getting gross again. Appreciate your guidance with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually this is very much normal. So when actually we are practicing mindfulness, certain areas of the brain get activated, so that produce some sort of jerks. But later these become quite natural. They become already activated, stimulated, and therefore you won't experience these kinds of jerks in the long run. But at the very first time things are, so when the meditation happens, mindfulness development happens, so these kinds of jerks may happen. So that indicates that certain parts of the brain are being activated. So that's in a way a good sign that you are doing it properly. Stimulations are happening. Certain parts of the brain are being activated. So that's an indication. And later, so these changes become available. They are not fading away, rather they are continuously being activated or slowly growing certain areas. So likewise, then later in the during the further development of the practice allows to maintain such kind of a situation, and there are no kind of triggers that happen at that time. So therefore, don't worry about these things, because brain changes also happen, and this could be the reason for these kinds of jerks, and it is quite natural.
We've just got one more question. It's not very clear because it's got Sinhala and English in it, so but I'll try to read it. So it's a Dhamma Sermon question. Dear Bhante, how can I pratyaveksha that a defilement has indicated? with metta.
Defilement has indicated. Now, actually, we need to recognize defilements. So, probably, I think you are referring that. So, how are we going to recognize defilements? So, that is, I mean, various properties we can recognize. So, whenever a defilement is there, so your mind feel like crowded. Suppose you are able to have a mind which is free from any defilement. So, that mind is a kind of a pure mind. It doesn't have any stress. It doesn't feel any burden and you feel relaxed and the mind does not have any inclination towards anything and it doesn't have any stains, any scars. So mind is fairly pure, like a clean sheet. But on the other hand, whenever some kind of a defilement is available, so when the mind is under the influence of a defilement, so it becomes colored. It has biased on a particular direction. Say it has kind of a little tense situation now, a little bit of stress now. And you feel a little burdened. So these are certain properties which helps us to understand, okay, now the mind is under the influence of a particular defilement. If we can't quickly recognize what exactly is the defilement. Now, say for example, if the mind become lustful, okay, probably you can easily recognize, okay, now mind has colored by lust. Mind was influenced by lust. Suppose if you get angry, so you can quickly recognize, okay, now the mind is under the influence of anger. So likewise, these are fairly straightforward. But there may be certain situations that probably it could be difficult to understand exactly what is the defilement, but the impact of that may be available, that you feel little stress, you feel burdened, and you have lost the clarity of the mind, your mind become a little crowded. So these are a certain impact happening because of defilements.
Yeah, so I hope that's what the question was. If not, maybe if that was not the question, you could post it next time and Bhante can take it up. So I think that's the last question we had today. So we would like to end the program. To end the program, I would first like to thank Bhante for his valuable time. Also, we would like to pass on our merits to everyone, both seen and unseen, who are enabling this program, and also to the participants for joining this program. So with that, we'd like to end today's program. Theruvan Saranai. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Yeah, Theruvan Saranai.